Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Gary Graham Hughes from the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU, coordinated by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the Eco News. Don't forget that you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Today, my guest is Kelly Fuller, Wind Campaign Coordinator with the American Bird Conservancy. Thank you very much for being with us today, Kelly.
Thanks for having me. As a native Southern Californian, it's very good to be talking to folks in California again.
Yes, and you're in Washington, D.C., working with the American Bird Conservancy. Can you tell us a bit more about your organization and your background and your current role with ABC?
American Bird Conservancy was founded in 1994. We conserve native birds and their habitats in the Americas, and that's from the way up towards the Arctic down to the tip of South America. And we are the only U.S. organization whose sole mission is bird conservation. We're working to halt extinctions, to protect rare species and their habitats, to reduce threats to birds overall, and to help build capacity in the bird conservation movement. As for myself, I got my start as a conservationist with the San Diego Sierra Club, working on the wind energy issue, working for proper siting of wind energy projects.
And that is your role now at ABC as the wind campaign coordinator.
Yes, we are working to get wind energy built bird smart.
All right, and I think that's, you know, the perfect lead-in to be able to frame the show for listeners to the Eco News Report on KHSU and to understand that we're having this interview with Kelly to give people who live here on the North Coast a vocabulary for understanding bird smart wind energy development. Many communities around the country are facing very difficult decisions concerning the development of wind energy projects, and clearly the North Coast community is amongst those with a proposed wind energy project by Shell Wind Energy for the Bear River Ridge area. The purpose of this show really is to discuss these increasingly well-received BirdSmart wind energy guidelines as advocated for by the American Bird Conservancy, and therefore through this discussion assist people living here in the Redwood region to develop a vocabulary around these guidelines to help guide decision-making and the kind of, well, I guess, process that a community needs to go through in deciding whether a project is really viable or appropriate for our area. So wind energy is a viable renewable energy, but there is a growing understanding of the environmental costs of large-scale wind. So Kelly, maybe you could give our audience, you know, a briefing on some of the impacts of wind energy development that is of concern to you in your position at the American Bird Conservancy.
Thank you. First off, I'd like to say that American Bird Conservancy's focus is, of course, on birds. So I'm going to be talking about the bird impacts. That said, for communities, there are, of course, other things that they're going to be wanting to look at as well. So for about the last 10 years, my organization has been looking at the impacts of wind energy on birds as wind energy has started being developed. And, you know, California had one of the examples of how not to do it right in Altamont Pass, where just the golden eagle death count alone is, depending on the calculations, around 70 golden eagles a year and hundreds of other birds in addition to that. And folks learned, watching what was going on in California with Altamont Pass, that the most important thing to do is to make sure that projects are sited correctly. And the Altamont Pass project has been so fatal because it is in an area that has a large concentration of raptors. So the first principle of what we call Bird Smart Wind is to make sure that projects are properly sited. And from the bird point of view that, you know, we're looking at, that means they're sited in places that you do not have unusual numbers of birds or you do not have rare birds. So you stay out of the most important areas. You go to areas that are less important to birds. But you also need to make sure that you really know what you're looking at. So the second part is to have very good monitoring, and that includes both pre-construction studies, done very well to know what's really there. And then after a facility is operating, good post-construction mortality studies so you really know what the impacts are. And in some cases, they may also need to do some studies to see, are there fewer birds in general in an area? Because one of the concerns is not just that what people think about potentially colliding with wind turbines. It's, will birds leave an area completely in order to avoid them and thus lose habitat in that way? The third principle of BirdSmart Wind is to operate it properly. And this is something that's going to be, I think, very important to your North Coast communities. We have been having some problems here on the East Coast in the last year with some wind energy facilities in West Virginia leaving their lights on at night. And the reason that matters is one of the most important operating principles is to minimize night lighting. And that means on the wind turbines themselves, doing a minimum of lighting necessary to meet the FAA requirements, blinking lights, not steady burning lights, but it also means turning off lights every place else you can on the facility. And unfortunately, there have been problems in West Virginia where lights were left on either inside a wind turbine itself and the light leaked out, or left on at infrastructure for the facility at a substation. And unfortunately, for instance, at one facility alone, nearly 500 songbirds were killed when lights were left on in a substation during the peak of migration, during heavy fog, bad weather conditions. And one of the things that can happen to migrating birds is if there are steady burning lights during migration in bad weather like fog, it is possible for the birds to become disoriented for their celestial navigation, for those that use that, to get messed up. And birds can wind up colliding into each other. They can collide into turbines. They can collide into infrastructure. And that is an example of a kind of death at a wind facility that can easily be prevented by minimizing the lights. And I certainly am not an expert on the North Coast, but what I do know about it is that you folks sometimes do get some inclement weather up there. And so it's going to be important, if facilities are built, that they really do everything they possibly can to keep that night lighting minimized. Now, the fourth principle of BirdSmart Wind is after you do everything you can to make sure it's sited in the right place, it's really well studied, it's really well operated, that if there are even doing all that, if after that point you wind up with birds being killed, that steps are taken in order to make up for those deaths. And that could be doing things that would result in more birds, such as buying habitat or restoring habitat. The number one threat for many bird species is habitat loss. So if birds are lost at wind facilities, but work is done to improve or replace habitat that they need, that can help compensate for any unavoidable deaths. But still, we need to do everything we can to avoid those bird deaths.
All right, you're listening to the Eco News Report on KHSU. My name is Gary Graham Hughes from the Environmental Protection Information Center, and I'm speaking with Kelly Fuller, who is the Wind Campaign Coordinator at the American Bird Conservancy, and we've delved right into the real thick of it, of the BirdSmart guidelines for wind energy development. And I think as you went through your briefing on the guidelines, Kelly, you got an opportunity to speak of some of the projects, the wind energy projects that have been problematic, the Altamont being an example, and a couple of the others that perhaps weren't really succeeding in achieving the operations necessary to be bird smart. I do want to keep, you know, our minds open to this. All of us who are attentive to the climate crisis know how well the wise development of alternative energies is for us to be able to surmount these challenges. And I guess I want to get right out there and ask you if you have any examples of some good energy projects, some projects right now that have actually stepped up and have been embracing these principles and been successful in implementing them.
Well, here's the funny thing, because I think we are all looking for that. It's really challenging to know. The challenge that we've got is that very, very few facilities will open themselves up to researchers other than their own paid environmental consultants. So So there is a lack of independent third-party data on what is actually going on. I can tell you about some practices that look like they're probably pretty good. For instance, there is a facility on the Texas Gulf Coast, the Pinesco facility, that we understand has actually shut down its turbines at times of peak migration in order to reduce the risk to birds. Unfortunately, I can't tell you how successful that's been, though, because here's an example of how hard it is to get data. My organization sent a Freedom of Information Act request to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about projects in the area where that Pinesco facility is. We sent that request in almost a year ago asking for mortality data, and we still have not received it. So there are practices that we think probably will work. There are areas that look like they might be better than others because they're not major migration pathways. They don't have some of these other characteristics. But we still don't really know for sure which facilities are working because we're just not able to get the mortality data, especially not mortality data that's independent, to really know what's happening.
And yes, without that data, it's really hard to know if methodology is successful or not, if it's appropriate. Of the guidelines that you've been sharing, the BirdSmart guidelines, it seems that sighting is particularly important. I'm interested in learning of the process that you might suggest that could be used for evaluating the appropriateness of the sighting of a wind power project.
One thing that people can do is they can look at guidelines that are online that talk about how to do this, because there are certain things that can be done. Now, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is getting ready to publish some voluntary wind guidelines that will be coming out very soon. Unfortunately, they're voluntary, so nobody has to do them, and, you know, we've seen that voluntary is not an approach that's going to work. But if you look at those voluntary guidelines, what they do is they set out a tiered process for evaluating, and if you read those, you will get some sense of the kinds of things that should be done.
All right. So, and are there any real red flags, you would say, as far as sighting goes? I mean, is there a red flag that is, just makes it really clear that, you know, this location is not appropriate for wind energy development?
Well, for instance, you wouldn't want to build in a globally important bird area. American Bird Conservancy, the National Audubon Society, designate certain areas as globally important to birds because they matter not just on a statewide level, not on a national level, but on a global area. You're going to want to keep the wind turbines out of there. And those kinds of things are available online. My organization is working on a bird risk map for wind development. I'm not sure when we're going to be publishing it yet, but we're trying to come up with a tool to help the public really evaluate and understand, you know, whether a facility might be in a good or a not so good area for birds.
All right. Well, that's very useful for folks living here on the North Coast, recognizing the importance of the Humboldt Bay area to migrating birds, and such is important to recognize. So, Kelly, how have these BirdSmart principles been received by the energy sector and specifically the wind power industry? Are they, you know, listening? Is there a level of engagement, or do you find that there's reticence to consider the importance of these principles?
Well, I think it's not so much the principles that are an issue, because if you talk to the wind industry, they'll say they're already doing this. But of course, you know, what does doing this mean? It all gets down to, you know, how do you interpret that? And we have not seen any wind companies come out and protest. What we did was last year, we formally petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to regulate the impacts of wind energy on migratory birds, because unlike other energy sectors, the wind energy does not have its direct impacts on the environment regulated. So we asked for that regulation. We're still waiting to hear back from Fish and Wildlife Service. You know, they certainly don't have to immediately respond to a petition like that. 91 groups so far have endorsed it. None of them are wind companies, but I think the wind industry is really waiting to see what's going to happen with these voluntary wind guidelines, because they are in a little bit of a bind, which is, as much as, you know, no one wants to be regulated, everybody wants to have the freedom to do whatever they want, but they've got a legal problem, and that is there are three important bird laws that wind energy facilities very often violate. The first is the Endangered Species Act. You cannot kill endangered birds unless you have got a special permit for that. The second is the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. Again, you can't kill those eagles unless you have a permit for that, and they've just started giving permits for that. But the third one is the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and that protects over 1,000 species of migratory birds. And right now, there is no way to get a permit to make it legal to kill those birds for a wind facility. So part of why we petitioned was we wanted to see some kind of mandatory, not voluntary, rules. And the carrot for the industry is that if they complied with their permit, then they would not have any liability potentially under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, even if after they did the best job they could, they wound up unintentionally killing birds. Now, the trick is there's never been a prosecution of a wind farm in the U.S. for violating either the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act or the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And so some of the companies have probably been thinking, well, we can just kill these birds, nothing's going to happen to us. The problem is these facilities need to last 25 to 30 years. And during that time, there are going to be different presidential administrations. And a new administration could come in and decide, you know what, we're going to crack down on these wind facilities. So we think that the best way forward for the industry is going to be to agree to do some things on a mandatory basis, but then to also get legal protection at the same time. And we think that's the best way to both protect the birds and to help the industry, because they're in an unstable situation legally right now.
Right. You're really actually offering services in their risk management, as it were.
Yeah. Well, you know, we really do want to see wind energy move forward if it's done right. American Bird Conservancy believes that wind energy has potential to be a green source of energy. It is not there yet. It really has to stress that. And one of the other issues right now is it is not a level playing field. Some companies do a better job protecting wildlife at wind facilities than others. And we think that it's not fair that the companies that want to do a good job, that they get, in a sense, penalized because there are other companies out there that are not as responsible. If everything they have to do is voluntary, then there's no incentive for the less responsible companies to do the right thing, and that could conceivably put the more responsible companies at a competitive disadvantage.
Yeah, and also it makes less responsible companies guilty of a certain type of environmental dumping on the international playing field that's actually considered a crime. I would like to explore a little bit more of how it will be possible to get to a mandatory level with these BirdSmart guidelines. What's the strategy that ABC is pursuing?
Well, what we have done right now is we have petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. By law, they do have to respond to that petition. But we're also waiting to see what's going to happen with the voluntary wind guidelines that are coming out. There are some potential legal problems, and we don't know exactly what's going on because we haven't seen the final draft version, hasn't been published yet. But there were some very disturbing things that happened while those voluntary guidelines were created. There was a process with the Wind Energy Federal Advisory Committee that made recommendations to the Secretary of the Interior. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service scientists looked at those recommendations. They wrote a set of guidelines. The wind industry got very upset, didn't like them, asked to have them changed and instead use what the Federal Advisory Committee wanted. And there definitely have been some legal issues in what has happened. And we were really sorry to see the government throw out what its own expert scientists wrote in favor of something that industry-dominated committee wrote. So we're going to be looking to see what finally comes out. I think the other thing that's really important is what people can do in their local communities, which is getting educated about these issues, working to make certain that, for instance, counties that need to pass conditional use permits for a facility, as sometimes they do, making certain that their county commissioners, their county supervisors, their county boards get educated by the citizens as to what a good wind energy facility would look like, what are the principles of BirdSmart Wind, and then the citizens really working with their elected legislators to make certain that anything that's going forward in their county not only looks like it's in the right place, but that if the county is going to approve something or a township is going to approve something, that they put the right conditions on to make sure that it's properly operated and properly compensated for with mitigation.
And that's some very handy advice for local residents who are concerned about if there will be appropriate wind energy development on the North Coast. We've been focusing a lot on the BirdSmart guidelines that are, you know, really rather specific to the turbines, are they not? But I still think it's important for us to talk a little bit about transmission lines. They're sometimes under-discussed when it comes to understanding the environmental impacts of energy development, and particularly in wind energy development. Do you have some comments that you'd like to share about the impacts of transmission lines on birds?
Transmission lines are also very important. You're correct. Three things there. First off, you can have habitat loss when they're built. The second thing is birds often collide with the lines, and sometimes things can be done to mark them. The best possible thing is to put them underground because that takes the risk away. Also, if they're not properly constructed, there can be an electrocution risk, especially for raptors such as eagles. And lines would need to be constructed properly so that the raptors can't spread their wings, contact two wires with their wings, and then be electrocuted. That's where it really gets into the nitty-gritty of how they are built. We are concerned as an organization about what's going to happen with the future build-out. Part of why we were so involved now is we're looking down the road. In 2008, the U.S. Department of Energy wrote a report that was really advocating for getting 20% U.S. electricity from wind energy by 2030. And at that time, with the number of turbines that were around, that meant that about a 12-fold increase nationally. And at that time, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service published an estimate of 440,000 birds killed annually by wind turbines in the U.S., and our concern was, then what happens with a 12-fold increase? You don't want to see the number go up 12 times from that, and that number does not even include transmission line losses, because that can already be very significant. It's also important for utility companies that they get these transmission lines, these power lines, constructed properly, because unlike the wind energy facilities, power line companies have been prosecuted by the U.S. government for killing birds.
Now, I think it's been great to get your perspective on this issue, to hear an outside voice, and also to hear some really rather objective principles. I mean, these are simply guidelines by which one can assess the appropriateness of a project. Early on, though, I did want to get a little bit more into the real impacts of wind energy on birds, and knowing the numbers can impress upon people how serious of an issue this can be. We're estimating anywhere from 100,000 to 440,000 birds a year are being killed by wind turbines. And then, as you say, if there really was to be this 12-fold increase, it can be anticipated that that mortality rate would increase equally. So do you have any other really impactful numbers?
I'd like to start by saying all of those numbers, nobody knows for sure. And you cited a range of 100,000 to 440,000. There are people who think that 440,000 is low. And that estimate was in response to industry estimates that left out a lot of things, such as there's something called crippling bias, which is a bird may collide with a wind turbine, be mortally injured, but may not fall to the earth right there. It may fly off and die someplace else. The numbers, the estimates for wind turbine mortality, they are calculated by counting the dead birds, and they'll do this for bats as well, a certain distance around the base of a wind turbine. And unfortunately, these estimates, they're not done on a daily basis. Some estimates have been done one time a month, somebody goes out. And any listeners who know about coyotes or other animals that would go take these dead birds know that they will be picked off by scavengers very quickly. So I think that people should realize that these numbers we have, they're the best guess. And one of the things that's disturbing about the Altamont Pass facility is it is the best studied wind energy development in the United States. And the more it's been studied, the more mortality has been found. So sometimes I hesitate when we get into the numbers, because people look at the numbers, and one of the things they'll say is, well, other things kill more birds. And it's true. Wind energy, if it's badly sited, badly operated, is one of only many threats to birds. And American Bird Conservancy works to reduce all threats to birds, because one of the problems that birds face is its cumulative impacts. It's not one impact by itself. They have all kinds of things that they're fighting. And so in order to have a thriving bird population for future generations, we need to get all of these threats down. And that's why my organization, we don't just try and improve wind energy development. We're working to reduce the deaths from collisions with buildings, from pesticides, from encounters with feral cats. All of those things add up to bird mortality. But you asked about specific impacts of wind energy development, and I think folks should understand that it's more than just the collisions with the blades, and that's what people know about, that that can happen. In addition, birds killed by colliding into infrastructure, and transmission lines, there's a huge issue with habitat loss. If we get to that 20% of U.S. electricity from wind energy by 2030, the U.S. government has estimated 20,000 square miles of habitat loss in order to get to that. And again, the thing about habitat loss, that doesn't just affect birds. That affects all kinds of wildlife. And for wildlife as a whole, habitat loss is one of the leading things that causes extinction. So again, we need to make sure that these facilities are well sited. There's one other interesting thing that happens that people don't realize. For some bird species, such as sage grouse, they can abandon habitat, just check out completely, when tall structures are built. And it's believed that the birds have evolved this way because they are prey species for other species that would perch up higher. And so if there's anything tall in their environment, that's a sign to them they should get out, essentially. So that's another issue. You know, it's not just the habitat loss, the habitat degradation. It's the abandonment as well. And those effects, that abandonment effect, can go out some distance from the turbines. So again, this is why we need to look at all of these things, get projects sited as well as we can, make sure that they're studied well, that they are operated well, and if after all of that there is any unavoidable loss of birds, that we do things to make up for that loss so that we will have more birds and healthy bird populations.
Kelly, this has been an incredibly informative conversation. My name is Gary Graham Hughes, and I'm your host on the Eco News Report, and I've been speaking with Kelly Fuller, who's Wind Campaign Coordinator at the American Bird Conservancy. Kelly, maybe a couple of words on how folks can get updates on the ABC Wind Campaign about your website, any newsletter, or Facebook?
Yes, www.abcbirds.org. That's our website. You'll see our wind energy program there from our website. You can follow us on Facebook. You can subscribe to our Bird Wire, which will give you all kinds of different news about birds, not just about wind energy.
All right. And do you have any last thoughts or considerations you'd like to leave with listeners here in the North Coast of California?
Really important for people to get involved in their home areas, to learn about this issue, to scratch beneath the surface and really get involved in what's happening in their own area. Because at the end of the day, nobody cares about your community as much as you do, and nobody cares about your community's wildlife as much as you do. Therefore, it's so important that people get involved.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the positive encouragement, Kelly. Good luck with your endeavors, and I'm sure we'll follow up again in the future. Thank you very much for being a guest here on the Eco News Report of KHSU.
Thanks very much.
All right. This has been the Eco News Report on KHSU. My name is Gary Graham Hughes with the Environmental Protection Information Center, and I've been your host for the past half hour. My guest today has been Kelly Fuller, Wind Campaign Coordinator with the American Bird Conservancy. You can find more information about the work at abcbirds.org. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the Public Affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org. where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, and is coordinated by the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Jesse and Fred for engineering this show. And be sure to join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU for the Eco News Report.